This is On the Media. I'm Brooke Gladstone.
And I'm Bob Garfield. Steve Bannon has come under fire because of his ties to the alt-right, the cohort that lurks on Breitbart News and trades in racist memes and segregationist aspirations. And given that the alt-right was part of the movement that vaulted Donald Trump into office and has now found purchase inside the White House itself, Hillary Clinton's memorable campaign tutorial has taken on a new edge.
Now, alt-right is short for alternative right. The Wall Street Journal describes it as a loose but organized movement, mostly online, that rejects mainstream conservatism, promotes nationalism, and views immigration and multiculturalism as threats to white identity. So the de facto merger between Breitbart and the Trump campaign represents a landmark achievement for this group, a fringe element that has effectively taken over the Republican Party.
But reactionaryism comes in a variety of flavors. New Yorker writer Andrew Marantz says that white nationalism is just one of four strains of the alt-right.
So the people who were most vocal about calling themselves alt-right in the beginning were in fact white nationalists. Richard Spencer, Jared Taylor, I mean, the list goes on. A lot of those people are very open about their ideology, which is about protecting white power. That is a small but vocal core of people who affiliate with the alt-right, which then over the last 5 or so years spread out to include what I would call three other categories in addition to the, you know, white supremacist category, which would be just nihilistic chaos agent internet trolls.
Anonymous vandal bullies, for the most part, just trying to get a rise out of folks?
Right. So that would be the second category, which is what you could call pure trolls. The pure trolls don't really seem to have an agenda. The third would be more sort of anti-feminist people who coalesced around Gamergate and similar things who just really want women to stop telling them what to say.
It's not just feeling that feminism has emasculated American men. It's really kind of ultra-sexism. They seem to be angry that they cannot treat women as mere prey.
Yeah, you see a lot of just real vitriol at any woman who doesn't look the way that these men think a woman should look. You saw that with the actress Leslie Jones. You know, you saw a good amount of it with Hillary Clinton.
But there's another jar, huh?
The fourth one would be the conspiracist jar.
The Alex Jones paranoic wingnuttery crowd.
Right. And once you have fully built your own reality field, which again is something that Trump has successfully done again and again, you can say whatever you want.
Now, are these odd jar fellows, or are they linked arm in arm and marching heroically into the future?
Well, they are certainly on the same march when it comes to Trump support. So for the past few months, you've seen them really sort of united in a common cause. But they are, in some sense, strange bedfellows. There are some people who really primarily care about borders and keeping America a European heritage zone. And those people may or may not buy into, you know, a conspiracy about fluoride in the tap water.
If I understand this right, the alt-right's means of stirring things up has something to do with media outlets like Breitbart, but it has more to do with how it operates in social media. There's a formula. And you did a profile on one of the mad scientists who has perfected the formula, a guy named Mike Cernovich.
He had built up a following independent of anything political as a kind of a self-help fitness writer.
And pickup artist.
Yes, and pickup artist and part of the manosphere. This guy, Mike Cernovich, is a mid-level amplifier. He only has 150,000 or so Twitter followers, but he really is able to mobilize them and harness their passion to drive essentially any story he wants.
For example, the notion that Hillary Clinton, during the course of the campaign, had some sort of undisclosed major health disorder, completely invented from whole cloth.
Right. Well, at first invented from whole cloth. He sort of looked at the tea leaves and said, I do not want this woman to be president. What can I, as a completely independent figure in my living room in Orange County, California. What can I do to affect the outcome of this election? And he mobilized that audience to say, look, we're not going to have an argument about Clinton's policies. We're going to go after her appearance and her health. That was his preferred persuasion tactic. It was a months-long campaign to create the perception that she was frail or ill. And when she did turn out to have pneumonia, when there was actual video footage of her actually fainting at a 9/11 memorial, he was like, did I create that?
And he repeats these memes until they enter the conversation among the diehards on social media, and then, not coincidentally, into the cogs of the great right-wing media conspiracy, Matt Drudge, Sean Hannity, Rush Limbaugh, Breitbart, and so on. How does he do that? What's the mechanism?
I went out and spent a few days with him in California and watched him over his shoulder as he does his daily routine on his laptop. And he told me, you know, when I decided I wanted to break into the news, I had to study how news cycles work. And what I do have is Twitter. And I know that if I can get a hashtag to start trending, then it ipso facto becomes something that people feel that they have to pay attention to. He got his core base of people, and it really doesn't have to be more than a couple thousand people. He'll rally them on Periscope, which is a video streaming app. He'll tell them, you know, in a sort of conversational way with them sort of responding by typed comments in real time, here's what's going on today. There was this bombing. How are we going to spin this bombing in New York? Turns it into a really pithy, kind of catchy hashtag.
It's a troll war room.
Right. And it's very open. What he's doing is trying to meme these stories into the conversation. And he has very specific targets. Brian Stelter on CNN and Chris Cillizza at The Washington Post. And to take Chris Cillizza as an example, he had written in The Washington Post, why are we even talking about Hillary's health? This is not an issue. And then 2 days later, he said, Hillary's health just became an issue in this campaign. And that was exactly the result they were seeking.
As you've looked at other people's coverage of the alt-right to date, do we misunderstand what is afoot here?
Yeah, I've seen some coverage that I thought missed the boat a little bit. I mean, there's some false equivalence stuff. There's also some basic assumption that alt-right just means to the right of whatever the mainstream Republicans say, when, in fact, a lot of these positions don't line up neatly on a political spectrum. And then I think it also sometimes misses the degree to which the purveyors of these memes are constantly shifting how serious they are. You know, often when they're called to account for something they've said or passed on or retweeted, they say, oh, that was just a joke. Why can't you get a thicker skin? One of my favorite exchanges was Trump goes out at a rally and says Obama's the founder of ISIS. Then CNN reports that he said that Obama was the founder of ISIS. Then he tweets, does CNN not get sarcasm? And then he goes on Hugh Hewitt's radio show the next day and Hugh Hewitt says, so you were being sarcastic? And he says, no, Obama was the founder of ISIS. So the slipperiness of tone, I think, is something that a lot of people have missed. You know, they'll point to one thing that someone has written or said or posted and say, this is your ideology. This is what you believe. You believe that Pepe the Nazi frog should be in charge of the White House or whatever. A lot of these things are not deeply held beliefs, especially with the more sort of pure troll end of the spectrum. They are throwing spanners in the works and just kind of seeing what happens.
Andrew, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Andrew Marantz is on the editorial staff of The New Yorker.
You come to The New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.